Suck me.
Yeah, bitch, suck it. Chop me that bone. Suck it.
Good.
Lobsters would be good at the stream deck. They could just hit it with their little pincers.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of these days, we'll teach the lobsters to use the stream deck.
Okay. That's all the use I have for them. I can't enjoy them as food.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If we got a lobster to handle the stream deck and hit all the soundboard buttons, would you start to swell up if it was just hanging out in front of you, not being eaten?
I think it would be fine, but we'd probably have to, like, wipe down the stream deck between uses just so it's like there's no cross contamination.
That's fair.
Yeah, I've been in hell.
Haven't we all?
Yeah, I've been taking a lot of L's recently, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get that supervisor job, which is honestly fine,
but yeah.
it would have drove me insane. What is driving me mad is my current feud with Ticketmaster.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. They promised me Blue Oyster Cult and Kansas. And they canceled it, or they postponed it for a year.
Yeah, yeah.
And somewhere in that year, Blue Oyster Cult, they dropped off the show. Now I have to see Kansas and Shooting Star, which I can only presume is a bad company cover band.
Oh, no.
Or a tribute act. Something along those lines.
Well, shit. So you just get to go see Carry On My Wayward Son and...
Shooting Star. That's one of their songs. That's the song they're named after, I imagine. And just the song Bad Company.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's probably a third one.
I feel like if you're a Bad Company cover band, you can't cover the song Bad Company because you're not Bad Company.
It's true. You're just a little suck up. But I've been waging a protracted email war.
Oh, yeah?
With several different representatives.
How's that come along?
Oh, well, I haven't got my money back yet, I'll say that. I'm just sending emails until someone budges, or until I crack.
Well, what has been the result so far? Have they, like, responded and told you to go fuck off, or...?
More or less.
Oh.
I've been in turns, I would say, very wordy and making legalistic arguments, I would call them. And then when they tell me to fuck off, I just send an angry message that's just very direct, where's my goddamn refund? Refund now. Give me my money. Money, money, money. I don't know. I enjoy being... It's nice, because I like to have like a little fight every now and then. You know me.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
I just like to have a little conflict that's not really that serious. I like when there's an alien beam that goes directly into my head. What the hell was it? The cricket?
Yeah, she's...
Oh, okay. Is it cricket? Is it cry cut?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. None of this matters anymore.
The podcast matters.
The podcast does matter, and that's why we keep having to do it.
Where was I? Oh, I'm not getting my money back, but I do like to have an argument. And I like to be enough of a crank that I'll use the word bait and switch in an email. And accuse them of such things. It feels nice.
Well, we got to get whatever enjoyment we can out of life.
Yeah, if you're stuck in hell, you know, you got to do what you can to make it heaven.
Oh, yeah. Well, one such person stuck in hell would have to be Justine Jones. And
she was up to something, wasn't she?
She was. And we're going to talk a little bit about it today. So welcome to the Raincoat Report. This is Boss here with Jeremy.
Hello.
And today we're going to talk about The Devil and Miss Jones 4. Usually we put some episodes in between us covering sequels, but since The Devil and Miss Jones 3 ended in such a cliffhanger...
Yeah, we just couldn't wait.
We couldn't. And granted, we had to get our Mother's Day episode in there. So well,
that's important. That's tradition.
Yeah. But we wanted to return and see what Justine's up to.
Yeah, she's... Well, I think we'll find that she's still in hell, and still in the company of our Virgil. I think he's just credited as Black Guy.
He is, or is he like the guide, I believe.
Yeah, he's the... Okay, is that his name?
I think that's how he's credited on IMDb.
Okay. Sometimes I just click on the credits, or I'll look at the credits in the film, and they're not clear. You know that. We all know that by now.
Yes, we're lucky whenever they're even remotely accurate.
We're lucky when they have real names that we can put them to and not, like, Dixie Wrecked set designer.
Yeah. So, this came along the same year as The Devil and Miss Jones 3 back in 1986, the year I was born.
Oh, the year, I believe, Slayer's masterpiece Rain and Blood came out as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So a very important year in history.
Eventful. Ground paradigm shifting.
Yes.
Yeah.
So The Devil and Miss Jones 4, much like The Devil and Miss Jones 3, features a cast and crew of stars of the time, including but not limited to, of course, Lois Ayers, who plays Justine Jones. Mm-hmm. Jack Baker, who plays the guide through hell, as he appears on IMDb.
Okay. So no real name, but a title.
Yep. We have a slight appearance from Paul Thomas, who was in the third one, of course, as the groom.
Yes.
But we've also got some other names and smaller roles, including Erica Boyer, Krista Lane, Kristara Barrington, Kelly Richards, Ron Jeremy, Mark Wallace, F.M. Bradley, Peter North, and many more.
Yes. Ron Jeremy was in part three as well.
Was he?
I believe so.
Okay. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Mark Wallace was, and
yeah, they're just
multiple of these people.
They're just Hell's denizens. They just kind of shifted the set around a little bit.
Oh, yeah, and Kevin James, who plays Serapis.
Oh, yes.
Who, as you will recall from the end of the last film, was laying in the middle of the road crying out, "Suck me."
Yeah.
And will he be sucked? We'll have to find out today.
Yes. After a brief recap and a brief break.
Yes, so we're going to take a quick recap break to recap the third film to each other.
Yeah, I don't remember what the hell happened.
Something about hell.
Oh, God.
And we'll be back to talk more about The Devil and Miss Jones 4, The Final Outrage.
Are we almost out of here? I mean, I can't imagine anything else. I've seen butt-fucking, blowjobs, men in diapers, girls drenched in cum, one which I might add was myself, and 1,000 other things I'd rather forget.
Well, listen, bitch, you better get used to these hellish delights, plus a couple of more that you ain't even seen yet, mama.
Like what? I can't imagine anything else.
Well, like this next room, which happens to be my favorite. This, the races.
Well, Jeremy, do you fear the Reaper?
Shut the hell up. Son of a bitch.
Oh, damn it.
Not so funny now. No, you better start sucking.
So The Devil and Miss Jones 4 opens with Justine in the shower again, just as we saw her in the opening of Devil and Miss Jones 3. And then we start to get flashbacks from The Devil and Miss Jones Part 3 as we get our credits on screen.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to really recap the whole thing, but I will say that her... mid-sex concussion and death is still amusing to me.
Oh, yeah.
As most porno deaths are.
Yeah, she gets bonked her head.
Yeah, she got bonked. But after like 4 minutes of this 64-minute movie, we finally cut in to continue the story. And as the last film ended, We had Justine and the guide through hell standing, waiting to cross a bridge being blocked by Serapis, who's laying on the ground crying, suck me.
Yeah, he's some sort of snake creature, it appears to be, some kind of reptilian beast.
Yeah, in this film, he's credited on IMDb as Lizard Man.
That'll work.
So I guess whatever that is.
It's a reptile.
Yeah. But the announcer tells us it's time for the final outrage. So the guide reinforces that Justine said she'd do anything to get out of here, and this is her chance. So she finally relents after being very hesitant to suck the Serapis fella. She tells the guide to turn around, saying that he can't watch her. But don't worry, the guide peeks anyway.
Yeah. He's not a man of his word.
No, he's not. That's why he's in hell.
Oh, yeah.
So we cut to Justine sucking Serapis's cock. The guide starts watching quite openly after a moment of peeking through his hands. The guide also walks up and just starts to rub Justine's leg as Serapis continues to say, suck me, repeatedly, and Justine plays with herself and sucks him. This continues for a bit, and the guide rubs her breasts, which is very notable in the sense that I realized at this point that he's wearing yellow dish gloves.
Yeah, there was a guy, I think I've probably talked about him before, but he used to be on our public access show, and he was like a black guy with like a big afro and sunglasses, but he also always wore like yellow dish gloves, like while he was making like his bizarre pronouncements and his high-pitched voice.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. TV used to be cool.
So Justine continues to suck and stroke away for a bit here. And eventually, she finishes Serapis off onto her chest and tits. Justine licks up a bit of this cum for a few moments. And then we cut to another one of these weird interview segments in these white rooms.
Yeah, this one's with Kelly. No, it's with someone else. But she's a lesbian.
Yes, that's what I know about her for sure.
Yeah.
I don't think she's named, at least in the film itself.
No.
This woman's talking to the camera, telling us that Justine was a lesbian and she hated men, but she just couldn't come out. She claims to have been Justine's first female lover. She says Justine was a little disgusted at first, but she finally admitted that she loved being with women. She claims that Justine hated men, and they didn't know how to please a woman. We cut to another circle of hell. This is the room of the perverse. People who had sick fantasies in life. So in death, they get to live out their sickness for all eternity. We cut around the room, and we see Troy Tanier fucking Carrie Fox doggy style.
Yeah, that's not particularly a perverse fantasy.
No, not particularly.
But I would say all the rooms so far have mostly been the perverse.
Yeah, yeah. We focus on this couple for a bit, and he's rubbing her breasts a bit as we get a bunch of close-up penetration shots with his hairy legs and his balls pounding into her. There's another group in this room with Kelly Richards, Maggie Randall, and Steve Powers. But we continue to focus on Troy and what's-her-face? Troy and Carrie.
Yes.
Troy rips open his shirt after a while, eventually... he starts fucking Carrie in missionary position, and after a bit, he pulls out and he explodes on her face and breasts as she sucks his cock a bit more. Erica Boyer and Tamara Longley are also fucking each other in this room. The guide says that the perverse suffer from the pain of VD and have to live with it forever. Drip, 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 he says.
Gross.
Justine notes he's sick, and it's like an insane asylum here. He confirms it's the insane asylum of hell. In the trio group, that being the group of Kelly Richards, Maggie Randall, and Steve Powers, one lady is on top of the other, and they're sharing a double-headed dildo.
They sure are.
That's just kind of folded in half to penetrate both of them as they're on top of each other. Where the guy joins in and starts to fuck the lady on top in the ass. Elsewhere in the room, we cut to Krista Lane and Ron Jeremy, who are fucking. But we focus on this trio for a bit, with the lady getting DP'd in the middle. The guide excitedly yells, "Go, go!" as he's fucking away. The guy fucking the lady in the ass pulls out and comes on her ass and the dildo. Hmm. The guide yells out, "Drip, drip, drip," and Justine calls him disgusting. Erica Boyer and Tamara Longley are 69ing. The guide watches this intently. They kiss and lick and bite their nipples and finger each other a bit before deciding to share a rather huge double-headed dildo. They fuck this dildo together for quite a while. Justine points to a guy in the room, a guy in the diaper, Ron Jeremy, who she thinks she went out with once. Yeah. She says his name is Chuck Franklin, and they dated in high school, and he was always trying to smell her and be weird. Chuck yells out to her, saying, "It's her old flame, Chucky," yeah, noting he hasn't seen her since he died.
Yeah. This is where he belongs.
Yes, it is. But he says he always knew that she'd end up down there. Justine again explains she's not dead. Chuck laughs and says he used to think that too. The guide again emphatically tells Justine that she's dead. Chuck's dead. They're all dead. Chuck laughs, saying that he gets to live out his fantasies for all eternity. He tells Justine that he always wanted to suck her toes. The woman in front of Chuck is blowing him, and he tells her it's too much, noting his cock is as raw as a pound ground something.
Excellent.
But the guide says more like a pound of ground Chuck, and he laughs. The guide slaps Chuck in the back of the head, making him break down in tears as the guide laughs more and tells Justine they've got to go. As Justine and the guide leave, Chuck's partner continues to suck his cock. She fingers herself as she continues to suck and stroke his cock, and then she licks her way up his hairy chest and kisses him before going back to sucking his dick.
Yes. There's the music in this one is by the same two groups as the first one,
mm-hmm.
Gleaming Spires and 11 Blue Men.
Yeah.
Apparently they're just like one band that the 11 Blue Men, there's not actually 11 of them.
Oh, okay.
I'm very disappointed to learn that.
But they're the same group in different forms? A
side project or something. They only recorded two tracks, which I have to imagine are the ones you hear like repeated through these films.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's like Parliament and Funkadelic.
Yeah, I'm not really, yeah. I don't know which one's which. I also found out that 11 Blue Men is like a famous medical mystery book.
Oh, okay.
So everything, you know, I'm disappointed that it's not a precursor to the Blue Man Group, but you live with what you live with.
Well, we eventually cut to Chuck fucking the lady in doggy position. She chants, "Fuck me, Chuck," for a bit as he pounds away, pulling her up and grabbing her breasts, stopping to lick her ass at one point. She demands that he spank her, and he obliges a few times. Chuck eventually pulls out and grinds his dick on her ass, spurting out cum. He puts his cock back inside her, and she tells him he can fuck her again, and he keeps going. We cut to another of these white room interviews. This is Justine's weird brother that we met in the prior film.
Mm-hmm.
He's bitching about her dominant, controlling personality and how she thought men hated her, except to screw her or to make personal gain. He says that's why she always associated with the worst men. We cut to the guide and Justine. He asks Justine if she knows how to make a hormone. She asks how, and he tells her, "Don't pay her."
Uh-huh.
She isn't amused by this joke.
No, I liked it. The audience liked it.
Justine asks if they're almost out. She notes that she's seen everything, butt-fucking, men in diapers, women covered in cum, including herself. The guide tells her to get used to it. There's still more to see, including the next room, his favorite room. The racists.
Oh, yeah.
So they walk into the room, and there's a bed on either side of the doorway. Justine notices, it's getting hot in here. It's awful. The guide notes that they're in hell, and he's getting horny. He tries to grope Justine, and she pushes him away. The guide points out Rusty Norris. I couldn't quite make it out, but...
His first name's definitely Rusty.
Yes, he was the worst racist in Tuscaloosa County. She asks where that is, and he explodes, saying he doesn't care, and he complains that she keeps asking questions. Justine's brother, in an interview segment, talks about how Justine compared hundreds of photographs and determined that the black man was more evolved due to the size of his weenie, as he puts it.
Yes.
He's asked if she had a thing for black men, and he says no, her interest was purely academic. Mm. Back in hell, the guide says that Rusty said he'd rather cut off his weenie than to fuck any, as he puts it, non-white bitches. But now he has to fuck two non-white women for all eternity.
Yep.
So this is a trio here, Mark Wallace being Rusty,
mm-hmm.
and he's joined by Christara Barrington
yes.
and Purple Passion.
Yes, who I have not seen, I don't think we've seen any of, but I'd like to see some more.
Yeah.
It's good to see the other ones are veterans. Mark Wallace has like a backwards swastika armband on.
Yes, he does. I didn't notice that until later in the scene, but it's quite noticeable at one point.
I think once they focus on that scene specifically, it becomes pretty evident.
It's very Tuscaloosa County of them.
Yeah, it sure is. Jeez.
So on the other side of the room, there's another trio here. And this is Patty Petit joined by F.M. Bradley and Robbie D. The woman here, Patty Petit, her character's name is Amanda Pepperloaf. She was a white southern bitch, according to the guide. As he puts it, he thought that all they were good for was shoe shines and housework. Now she's finding out what else we're good for.
Ah, having big dicks in this movie.
So then Justine, in pure Twitter form, asked where all the black racists are.
Yeah, that was good.
The guide says they're not called racists, they're called smart. They argue, which leads to Justine calling the guide racist, pointing out him calling her a stupid white bitch and such. He says, well, you're stupid, you're white, and a bitch, so what's your motherfucking problem?
Yeah, he's not wrong.
Yeah. She calls him crazy, and he mimes eating his own arms.
Get a close-up on the cunt. It's beautiful.
That was an accident. Sorry.
She calls him crazy, and he mimes eating his own arms and then starts screaming at the racist groups as they fuck. Justine takes off, and the guide chases after her. Meanwhile, while the cats are away, the racists will play.
Oh, yes.
So we see Amanda getting stuffed hard by one guy while she licks the other's ass. There's a real weird racist tribal thing going on with this trio, behind the green door.
Yeah, they have like face paint and fake nose rings and things like that.
The guy not fucking her dances around in the background at one point, and then we flash to Amanda laying on her back on top of one guy with his cock in her ass. The other guy fingers her vagina a bit before positioning himself to join in by fucking her vagina so that she is fully DP'd.
Hell yeah.
Amanda's getting banged out pretty hard for quite a while here.
Mm-hmm. I was worried from the chamber of the perverse when it started with just some regular doggy style that this one was going to be a little less extreme.
Yeah.
But those fears have been assuaged.
Yeah. eventually, the guy fucking her vagina pulls out and comes all over her pubes. She scoops up some of the cum and licks it a bit. On the other side of the room, Christara Barrington is... blowing Rusty while Purple Passion rides his face. Then we see Christara riding Rusty reverse cowgirl for a bit. Then Purple doing the same, screaming as she bounces up and down. We cut to Rusty fucking Christara as she lays down and Purple is on top in a 69 position. He gets down to eat out Christara for a moment, revealing... Yeah, at this point is when I notice his swastika armband. He goes back to fucking Christara for a bit. Purple reaches in to guide his cock and lick both of their genitals a bit, then licks Rusty's nipple as he's fucking. Purple sucks Rusty's cock a bit as she fingers Christara, then again guides his cock into Christara. Purple demands Rusty come for her, wanting to taste it. He eventually pulls out and comes on Purple's lips and Kristara's bush. They smear around the cum, and Purple demands he fuck her again.
He has to, because he's in hell.
Yes, he must fuck forever, whether he wants to or not.
But he seems to mostly be enjoying it at this point.
Yeah, he does.
I thought there might have been, like, more, I guess, racially based verbal abuse in this, yeah. But there was not.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, that's good, but, you know, I wouldn't put it past the Dark Brothers.
Dark boys.
Yeah, it's in their name.
We cut to another interview. This guy was in the last one, but I noticed here he has like a priest collar. He says that Justine loved her father very much, and maybe she had a hard time finding a guy who lived up to him. He's asked if she had a thing for her dad, and he says no, just the love a daughter has for her dad. He's asked if her father was controlling of her as an adult, and he says no, no one can tell her what to do. We cut back to hell, and Justine's sitting on the ground. She's saying she hopes she finds out it's all a bad dream. The god shows up and says it isn't. She tells him to get lost, and he says good luck finding her way out. She stops him, and he yells at her for not being able to face reality. Justine again says that she just wants to go home, and the god tells her he can tell her about a dream he had once. It was a dream that revealed to him the very essence of his existence. He notes maybe it can help her too. So she asks him to tell her, and he begins. The god notes, it all started with a woman's ass. And he stops and says, excuse me, a bitch's ass. Floating out in space. He saw a huge disembodied dick hanging out of her butt.
Mm-hmm.
Which symbolized to him the blight of white men's wives.
Yeah.
He then saw a pig head that told him that he was dead, and I'm a pig head, and told him to wake up.
Yeah.
He says that's how he finally accepted that he was in hell.
The talking pig head is pretty cool.
Yeah.
They should have used it more.
Yes. Justine was not impressed with this. He explains that he's serious. He then begins to describe another dream. Begins with a woman's ass, excuse me, a bitch's ass, floating in the water. Justine starts to walk away. He tells basically the exact same dream with the pig's head in a paddle boat.
Yeah.
The guide then looks up and notices Justine's gone and panics. He says she went through the wrong door, noting that no one has ever survived. I think he calls this the ordeal of the taboo breakers.
That's what I wrote. I think we are correct.
We cut to another interview. This is with her high school boyfriend that we saw in the last film. He says Justine wasn't the type of person to do anything irrational. He notes he thinks that there must have been some foul play for her to disappear. He says he was the second most important man in her life, second to her father. He knows she always talked about how much Justine's father loved kids. He says he misses Justine. We cut back to hell and Justine's in another room. The guide says this room is off limits to everyone. She points out, who is that woman? And the guide looks across the room and exclaims, that's you. And we get a shot of her receiving oral. The god says, that must mean that is, and she confirms, it's her father going down on her in the room.
What you're about to do is against the law in Alabama?
There we go.
Actually, might not be. I don't know. Tough to say. I am no lawyer.
This is not legal advice.
No. This reminds me of in Corruption when Jamie Gills is looking in that room.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And he sees himself licking those feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a classic.
We get a cutaway to Justine and her father in a bedroom. In it, she asks her dad if they can play the naked fun game together. In front of them, in hell, her dad is going down on her. Then we cut back to the cutaway flashback or whatever, where she again asks if they can play the naked fun game together. He says, sure, suck on this, slut, and pushes her head into his lap. So throughout this whole scene, we get a bunch of flashbacks to that sequence about the fun naked game or naked fun game.
The naked fun game. It was important that we covered Taboo 3 between this and that to remind people of incest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the punishment for it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We're becoming moral.
Oh, yeah. We are basically the moral barometer of this country now.
I think so. If I don't agree with it, it's wrong.
Justine runs out of this room. And meanwhile, in front of the guy, Justine's dad mounts her and fucks her as she lays on her back. He's standing, fucking her with his dick poking out of some white, black polka-dotted boxers. He fucks her like this for a couple of minutes. The guy excitedly watches, and Justine's dad sucks on her nipples and makes out with her. We then cut to Justine riding her dad cowgirl as the guy watches and strokes his cock with his dish gloves. Justine bounces hard on her dad's cock for a bit, caressing her breasts and enjoying herself. The bouncing and riding continues for a bit, and the guide is enjoying the show. After a while, her father pulls out and shoots a big load. She strokes it and licks up some cum. The guide laughs.
Now, Peter North is credited. I assume he's just someone dropping loads.
Yeah, or I don't know.
Maybe just someone in one of the orgy rooms.
Yeah, I don't. Well, let's see. IMDb says he has a credit only.
Okay.
Which means that he probably doesn't appear in this. He appeared in the last one as one of the slut men.
Gotcha.
So I think this is one of those things where the credits between these films are basically just directly shared.
All right. I just didn't know if they brought him in for some like stunt loads, you know? I mean, the kind of work he's good for.
It's possible, but we don't have evidence.
We don't have real evidence of it. Unless the Dark Brothers are listening and would like to reach out.
According to the Internet Adult Film Database, this father here is played by Jim Taylor.
Excellent. Who's he? Jim Taylor.
Yeah.
Jim the Tool Man Taylor.
Oh, boy. He has only two credits, this and The Devil of Miss Jones 3.
That makes sense.
We cut to an interview with the lesbian woman who we saw earlier, who says that Justine's problem was that she grew up normal, in an all-American family. She wouldn't make a good lesbian. Look at me, she says. She says that her dad used to beat her mother, and when he left, she became an alcoholic, and she had to become a whore. She said to herself that she'll never let a man stick his cock inside of her.
Yeah.
Take it from me. A good lesbian comes from a broken home.
Maybe that's true.
I don't know.
I don't know enough lesbians. It's a real blind spot.
Yeah.
They hired a lesbian at work, and she dresses like Weird Al. I like her.
Next time you see her, ask her if she comes from a broken home.
Okay, I will.
This interview continues, and she's asked if Justine hated men, and she says yes. She notes Justine always talked about her father, who was an asshole, and she'd break down crying, and not happy crying. But Justine wouldn't talk about it too much. She said that she saw a picture of her dad, and he looked like an asshole. She's asked if all men look like assholes to her, and she says yes, but he looked like a huge asshole. And he looked like he had a huge asshole, as big as a mouth.
Yeah, mouth-sized asshole.
The interviewer then asks, how big of an asshole do I look like? And she motions with her hand, about this big. We see Justine wandering in hell, and she hears an announcement welcoming her to the pit of hell, the home of Satan himself. He and he alone guards the only exit to the world of the living. Satan here is just a head on a table, who says, hello, how are you? Can I lick your asshole? Justine is understandably disturbed by this.
It's a pretty unique representation of Satan.
Yeah.
I can't think of any others that are just a head and a table. Now, in Dante's Inferno, he's frozen in ice.
Okay.
But this isn't that.
No, it is not. It's not exactly.
Kind of that on a budget.
Yeah. Justine runs through the doorway labeled exit and takes off as Satan continues to repeat, hello, how are you? We then cut to Justine, And she's laying in bed next to the groom played by Paul Thomas.
He's back.
He wakes Justine up. She rubs the back of her head. She asks who he is, and he explains, "You remember from the bar last night." She doesn't seem to remember, and so she tells him to go. And he says that he needs to take a leak first. So he stands up and goes into a bathroom, and we hear him peeing. Justine in bed says to herself, maybe she was too hard on him. We then start to hear some hell chatter in the background, and Justine goes to open the bathroom door and is surprised to be greeted by the guide from hell, who jumps out and yells, "Hey, baby, what is it? Say what, Jack?" And he says that over and over again, laughing at her as the camera zooms out. And we see that while she was in this, like, bedroom set, it appears to be just a set up in hell.
Yeah. What a place.
In another interview segment, a guy says that he's surprised Justine ever went out with him because he was a scumbag. He says, if he had to be honest, if there was ever a person who deserved to go to heaven, it was Justine. But fuck honest, I hope the bitch rots in hell forever. The guy asks if that was okay, and the interviewer asks if there was anything else he wanted to say about Justine, but he says he thinks he's said enough already. So the camera pans over and reveals the interview. It's the guide from hell, who cackles like a villain and flicks his tongue at the camera to end the film. We cut to credits with a poppy 80s song playing.
So that was a real... There were like two twists at the end.
Yeah.
Wow. So he's making this documentary. Maybe that's why... That's how she got to hell. This demon is like, I gotta ask all these people. I have to gather... He's like a lawyer. He's like, I gotta build my case.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's just a content creator trying to create content. Like us, really.
Yeah.
Except his is... perhaps a bit more mean-spirited and eternally torturous.
I could make it worse.
I think that it's our podcast is only eternally torturous to the people whose Spotify breaks and just starts playing stuff automatically and they can't figure out how to stop it.
Yeah.
I like to think a good third of our listeners are that.
Yeah.
Who accidentally play us on Spotify and can't stop for some reason.
Yeah, they're... phone is falling on the floor of their car and they've got to drive about an hour.
But yeah, that is The Devil and Miss Jones 4, The Final Outrage. And we've finally been fully outraged by The Devil and Miss Jones.
Wasn't The Final Outrage one of the Naked Gun films?
No, The Naked Gun.
It's The Final Insult.
Maybe, I think it might be, yeah, I think 33 and a third is The Final Insult.
Okay.
But, good. Yeah. Well, this is not a Naked Gun film. Unfortunately, there's no Leslie Nielsen here.
Oh, wow. He had, like, that career, kind of, like, before he became a comedy guy, where he was, like, serious?
Yeah.
What if instead of doing, like, those roles, he'd just done some porn?
I'd have more respect for him.
Me too.
That's okay, Leslie Nielsen. I still have respect for you.
See you in hell, Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah, see you in hell. And we'll see you on the other side of this break when we give our final thoughts on The Devil and Miss Jones 4, The Final Outrage.
Let me tell you about this dream I had once. A dream that revealed to me the very essence of my existence. It might even be able to help you, too.
Okay, tell me.
Well, it all started off in darkness. And I saw this ass, this woman's ass. Oh, excuse me, bitch's ass floating out in space. And as it moved past me, I saw this huge, dismally dick hanging out of the butt, which symbolized to me the plight of white men's wives and what they want.
Well, that was an eventful break.
Yep.
I sat here and coughed a little bit.
Well, it's good for you to get all your body sounds out in between sections of the show.
Yeah, I usually have to hold them in. That's why I don't talk as much anymore. I make too many sounds. I mean, it's tough to keep them all in, but fortunately now they have to come out because it's time for...
The Raincoat Review.
beautiful.
Thank you. I think I can give my final judgment on this film, much like God himself has sentenced Justine Jones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now that I've got the whole picture.
The whole picture.
The whole picture. As big as a mouth. Ah, boy. But, yeah, I don't, I'll be honest, I don't remember a ton of the first one at this point. I'm glad there was a little recap.
Okay.
But, I think I gave that one about a 3. I thought it was a decent, like, build up. I was hoping there would be maybe some more in the second one, but it does seem to rely on a similar, method of just moving from room to room and just looking at the things, which that's what, you know,
yeah,
that's what the Inferno is anyway. So can't fault it too much for using the same structure, I suppose.
Yeah.
More sucking. I do appreciate that than in the Inferno, if yes. I'm remembering correctly. No one's buried up to their neck in shit in this one, which I think was probably a mistake.
definitely a weakness to this narrative.
Yeah. But, no, I do think it resolved in a pretty decent manner, overall. I like the ending where, I like the fake out ending.
Yeah.
That's a good little one for this. I like that her guide in hell is also like her little tormenting imp and is just building sets and stuff to trick her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff's nice. I like, who plays the guide again?
The guide is played by Jack Baker.
He's fun. He's a great character. Probably the most developed character here as far as someone with like an actual personality.
Yeah.
The rest of them are a little bit flat, except for Ron Jeremy's character gets some development.
A little bit, yeah.
He's a diaper freak. He's got a full name. But, I think the conclusion of the, I think the final outrage wasn't quite outrageous enough. We've seen people be traumatized by their incest before in better ways than this. You know, we've got many classic examples.
Well, let me interrupt you here.
What did
I do? I was researching the guy Jack Baker here. Yeah. Did you know that Jack Baker appeared on such television shows as Mission Impossible?
Oh.
Good Times, Happy Days,
mm-hmm.
MASH.
I'm not at all surprised that he was on Good Times.
And The Jeffersons.
Or that. Cool. So he is kind of like a Leslie Nielsen who became a porn man.
He was also an audience member in Stiff Competition.
Yes. Good for him.
And he was in a movie called For Your Thighs Only. And, like, hundreds of other films.
Certainly. What a... Jack Baker, huh?
Yep.
What a guy. Also, Rick Baker's brother.
Yes.
But, back to my review.
Yes.
I think the story arc, as I said, wraps up pretty nicely. The sex in it is pretty good. I like, how rough a lot of it is.
Yeah, yeah.
We're moving, I feel like, more into the modern era with this sort of film. There's more focus on the butt and double-ended dildos.
Yeah.
Things of that nature.
Fun stuff.
Diapers, even, to some degree. Snakes. You know, everyone likes a little snake play.
Yeah.
You know, just like, you know,
serpent play.
Suck me. You just lay there until your wife or girlfriend or whatever just is like, okay.
That's how you get things done.
I enjoy the music from the Gleaming Spires and the 11 Blue Men. Some nice percussive, occasionally noisy music that is fit for hell. I like their interpretation of hell in this movie. It's similar to Devil and Miss Jones Part 2, where it's just some like very basic sets, but they are like nice and kind of have sort of like a more of a theatrical, like a stage play sort of presentation.
Yeah.
Especially like the segments between when they're just like on like a little strip of land or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of thing is. Do feel like the saga ultimately is it's a longer journey than I care to take. I think you probably could have done this entire thing within probably about 100 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that probably would have made a better film, but you know, you got to get your money where you can. This really, it predates the thing of just breaking like a book up into two different films, you know?
Yeah.
Or three in the case of The Hobbit, you know, it's really working at serializing films. So for that, I don't like that. But I guess I would give it a 3 overall.
Okay.
It wasn't bad. Certainly there are some good elements to it, but at this point, I know what I like and I don't like, and this is just too much fornication.
Yeah.
I need, you know me, I like a little bit more meat.
Yeah, I think that this movie was a little bit more just sex scene after sex scene than the last one. There was a little more character development and getting things started in the last one.
Right.
I think that I would say that I like this one slightly less than the last one just because of that. But, you know, it's got some nasty sex scenes in a good way. Mm-hmm. And
it's got a funny performance.
Funny performances. And, you know, it was an interesting watch. I mean, at the end of the day, it was 64 minutes. It had no opportunity to become boring.
Right.
I'm also going to give it 3 stars, but just with the asterisk that while I gave the other part 3 stars, I like this one a little bit less, but not a half star less.
No, it's a 0.75, which I have forbidden.
Yes. But, you know, it is what it is.
Under threat of punishment.
Yes. Hey, now. So, in the meantime, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Raincoat Report, raincoatreport@gmail.com if you want to email us.
Do it or I'll pinch Tyler's tip.
Oh, yeah. Tyler's coming by and apparently Jeremy's going to pinch his tip.
If you don't pay me $5.
Yeah, for $5 a month, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/raincoatreport, where this week we will be giving the final installment of our saga, talking about Playboy TV's foursome.
It's our own final outrage, in a way.
Yes, it is. And it will be finally outrageous, I guess. I don't know. No, it'll be good.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Yeah, I'll be wrapping up season one of that.
Yes. Wrapping up season one, and then I think we'll look into some other serialized adult
entertainment.
Entertainment, yes.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a bevy of choices to choose from. If you are a Patreon subscriber and enjoy that kind of content and have any recommendations, you can throw us a line on our social media or at raincoatreport@gmail.com.
Yeah, yeah, or message us on Patreon.
Yeah, message us anywhere.
We had a patron comment suggesting another series we cover, and that might be what we do next.
All right, cool.
We'll talk more about that.
Yeah, that's behind-the-scenes stuff. You guys don't need to see how the sausage is made.
Yeah. One of our patrons has
gifted us
something fantastic, but we're going to cover that in a couple weeks, so we won't go too far into it. But, you know, thanks, patrons. Yeah, and
Thank you for the package.
Jeremy says, looking down at a rubber ear.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that here in a couple weeks.
Stalker sent me this.
It's a real ear.
I know.
Vincent Van Gogh sent you it.
Yeah. I've been looking at it for a while, but I guess I'll talk about it now. It's an ear from, I believe, from a real doll.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whether a personal real doll or like a situation like when I worked at UPS and they would break down a plane and they would just give you pieces of it. maybe that's what happened. Either way, I feel like that lady that Van Gogh sent the ear to is really ungrateful. I really appreciate this thing. It's been sitting on my nightstand for weeks now. I look over it and I whisper sweet nothings to it. So thank you so much. I will cherish it always. And I have some real doll stickers for you as well that I forgot to bring, but I'll bring them soon. Also, I don't know. The other thing seemed like a veiled threat. There was a pamphlet in there for funeral planning services.
Oh.
Yeah. But, you know.
Well, we always figured that we would probably die by the hands of our fans. So
I assume someone from the internet is going to come and kill me one day, so it's fine. I'd rather it be someone who liked me than someone who hates me.
Fair enough.
All right. And, you know.
If you're going to go through the ordeal of the taboo breakers and face your father, don't forget your raincoat.
Hmm. Gross. I could blow up anything. Screws go up like rockets. Nearly everything explodes. Particles and segments filter down into the fuming holes. How can I do these things? Don't I?
Yeah.